Now, loads of texts about Niall Quinn. Niall Quinn would make a brilliant Irish international men's team manager. I didn't ask him because he had a time as manager at Sunderland and it didn't last for long. And then he went on to be, well, he was chairman manager at the time and then they brought in Roy Keane. Niall is a fantastic person and I admired him when he played soccer. I'm a massive fan of Niall. I wish him and his family well, says John and Cavan. And what an articulate and intelligent spokesperson Niall is and what a worthy cause he represents. Though, as a United fan, he was a thorn in our side. But the boy done good. We used to see Niall in buglers, having a pint. Great service to Ireland. Loved by the people. Would Niall go for the big job? Well, I can't answer for him, but I think no. That's Lehman Ratfarnham. And Jerry says, a couple of years ago, Niall was visiting Care. We met by chance and joined our session in the local hotel. He gave his time freely for photos and chat to our Care cultist group, young and old, and joined in the session singing a song solo himself. A real gentleman and delighted to have met one of my football heroes. That's Jerry. Now, 5 on 5 on RAID RTE.ie. We will be talking about things of an adult nature for the next 20 minutes or so. So if you have any little ears around, you might want to ask them to leave the room or change the dial or whatever. Now, the now infamous Prince Andrew Newsnight interview, in which he talked about his friendship with convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, made headlines around the world in 2019. The fallout from the interview was so immense that Prince Andrew stepped back from public life and was stripped of his title. Sam McAllister was the interview's producer behind it, and she later wrote a book on it, and now that book has been made into a movie on Netflix and it's number one in the Netflix charts in Ireland. And Sam joins us now on the line. Good afternoon, Sam.
Good afternoon, how are you today?
Great, congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much. It's all mad, Ray, mad.
It is mad. So you're played by Billy Piper. Before we get into the whole story, how does that feel, seeing yourself represented by somebody else on screen?
It's just completely bonkers. I mean, I'm an ordinary woman in an extraordinary situation, and now I'm being played by a national icon, a global icon.
Yeah.
So there aren't words that we can say in polite company, and they're big, and they're just, it's a sensational experience. I'm the luckiest woman alive.
Yeah, and does she do a good job?
She does an amazing job. I'll tell you why, because she's got two parts to her. There's the superficial element, you know, the wig and the lipstick and all of that stuff, which makes her look like me, so much like me that the crew couldn't tell us apart. And then there's like the soft stuff, the empathy, like my personality. She spent loads of time with me.
Yeah.
So I'm a nice mix of kind of squishy marshmallow with 1% kind of steel. And I feel she really encapsulates that, you know, in the nicest possible way.
Covered in faux leather.
Well, I wish I could afford leather, Ray, but the truth is that it's basically 99.9% plastic.
I said full leather.
Yes. I thought you said full. I apologise. That was an annoying English person moment.
No, that's just, it's a lost in translation, Sam, lost in translation. So it's full leather. We've established that, or plastic, yes.
It was faux, exactly. Yes. They call it pleather now so they can charge you twice as much.
Do they? Right, okay. And I watched your TED talk as well, so she did capture you, you know, because you were very much yourself doing the TED talk, and there was 15 minutes of you on your own on stage, so you could definitely see the real Sam McAllister. So bring us back. You were a lawyer before you joined Newsnight. Now, a lot of people in this organisation go the opposite direction. They decide that the media isn't for them, and they go into law. So why the change in career?
I've got to be honest with you, it was kind of like the thing I most wanted to do, because being paid for arguing seemed like a very sensational option. Mm. But I'll be honest with you, I was really miserable, and I was in my 20s, I did it for 2 years, and I thought, oh my God, well, there's 30, well, 40 years nowadays, maybe even 50 years left of this, and I was really unhappy, so I left.
Okay.
So I ended up in journalism because a friend worked at the BBC on a legal program called Law in Action on Radio 4, and she invited me in, and the rest is kind of history. I went for 2 days and ended up there for 15 years.
And you were the booking producer on Newsnight, and you seemed, and this is the way the movie paints you anyway, because we wouldn't be privy to what happens in the Newsnight office, that you were a bit of a black sheep in that you were into sort of Gossip, Daily Mail, a bit like that, where the rest of the team are a bit snooty about that sort of thing. Oh, is that correct?
Lovely. No, I would say, to be fair to the team, they were incredibly brilliant. But, you know, a lot of them had a very sort of different education to me. And I feel I was really lucky. You know, I like kind of like Real Housewives. And I like Wittgenstein. Well, look, I like Real Housewives, let's be honest. I like Cosmopolitan and I like philosophy. I don't feel you have to pick a side.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So I felt I was quite lucky that I sort of understood what normal people like me enjoy consuming without needing to talk about Wagner or Catullus. I've never really read any Catullus, I've got to be honest.
Okay. Single parent, and that's important in the way things pan out and who you met when you went to Buckingham Palace. So Prince Andrew was doing this thing called Pitch at the Palace, where he was bringing people with money and young entrepreneurs together and seeing if some magic could happen. And that was one of his projects. You got an email about that and you were going, well, that's not really for Newsnight, but I have a relationship now with somebody in the palace. And that's where it started.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's a bit boring for a screenwriter when they say, how did it begin? And you said it began with an email.
Yes.
But that's modern life, isn't it? So a few months after we turned down the first offer of that puff piece that you've so brilliantly described, I was invited to Buckingham Palace in May of 2019. And this was before things really hit the fan for Prince Andrew. And just as they were beginning to go horribly wrong, and Jeffrey Epstein was about to be arrested, indicted and dead, and Ghislaine Maxwell was no longer on the run, she was about to be arrested. So yes. Prince Andrew's kind of like status changed hugely
overnight.
Over the period of time from the email to Buckingham Palace visit. That's absolutely right.
And that visit, you met Amanda Thirsk, who was the main person in charge of Andrew's dealings with the media. A serious woman, but also a single parent.
That's right. I mean, very sadly, I mean, Amanda was an incredibly impressive woman with a brilliant education and extremely sharp and competent. But very sadly, she was in the situation because her partner had passed away. Yeah. So we had that kind of understanding of being, well, second in command in her case, 22nd in command in my case. But, you know, being from a household in which we're bringing up children, yeah, you know, and trying to do best by them.
How did you enter Buckingham Palace? Was it through that side gate to the right or was there another entrance?
No, I went through the front gate. I couldn't believe it. Yeah. Is that mad?
That is mad.
I traipsed across with all the tourists thinking, who the toot is that woman? And I traipsed across the gravel in inappropriate shoes and almost killed myself before I even arrived. But yeah, right through the front gate.
So you didn't even tell your boss about this initial meeting. There was chat, not for you. Good luck if anything else comes up. And then there was a second approach. And this time you got a bit further.
That's right. I waited for months and months. It's a merry dance when you're an interviews producer. You want to not harass people, but you need to stay in the game. Mm. And so the next time, after months and months of messaging and trying, was a meeting at the end of October, which I took Emily along to, which you see dramatised. You see the third meeting dramatised in the movie, but not
so
that second
Emily
meeting.
So Emily is Emily Maitlis, who's the interviewer, and people will recognise her, played by Gillian Anderson in the movie. So
correct.
You wouldn't normally bring the star with you?
Never. I'd never done a negotiation with a presenter for two reasons. The first and the most obvious pretentious editorial reason, that you don't want your presenter mixing with the person they're going to interview because it can put them in difficulty, right? And the second reason, which you might have noticed by now, is that I'm a little bit boisterous and perhaps it's best to do your, you know, negotiations where you can deal with people without being overseen. So
yes,
it was unusual for me and unusual for her, but very helpful.
So that was just before Jeffrey Epstein was arrested and he took his own life in custody.
That was after. That was in
October.
That was after.
Oh, right. Okay.
Exactly. So things had really ramped up in terms of the heat on Prince Andrew and the pressure on him to make some kind of proper public statement.
So where did you leave it at the end of that interview, that meeting?
They said they'd get back in touch, the 12 longest days of my life. And then in the middle of November, we were invited back to meet him face to face, which you do see dramatised in the film, with Rufus Sewell playing phenomenally Prince Andrew with 3 hours of prosthetics. So that visit to Buckingham Palace was on the Monday. They said yes on the Tuesday, and we did the interview on the Thursday and the Nation story on the Saturday.
Right. Just a couple of details I want to talk to you about, if you don't mind. So in that meeting, there was yourself and Emily Maitlis and some senior editor from the BBC, from Newsnight as well.
That's right, a deputy editor called Stuart McLean.
So there were three of you on one side of the table. On the other side of the table, there was Amanda Thirsk, who we've already mentioned, Prince Andrew, and then just at the last minute, he invited somebody else into the room.
That's right. There was a surprise guest, a real curveball. At the last second, he brought along his daughter, Princess Beatrice.
What age was she at the time, Sam?
She must have been early 30s. And to be honest with you, I'm not easily, you know, concerned or discombobulated. But you can imagine such a sensitive topic, such a difficult issue. And doing that in front of his, you know, young daughter was really quite a curveball.
He knew at this stage that all the questions, a lot of the questions, were going to be about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. He'd been photographed with him in Central Park in 2010. So he knew he had to explain the relationship with a convicted sex offender.
Correct. We're very fair at Newsnight. We just play with like a really open bat. So it was very clear the whole way through that the only way we would do this interview was if we had free rein to ask all the questions that the nation wanted answers to.
How were you selling it to him, Sam?
On the human level and on the other level. The human level is he used to have an extraordinary life, and that was ebbing away because of this association with Jeffrey Epstein. And I think on the more kind of like pretentious level, you know, ultimately, if you want to change the way that people see you, you have to do something active, and it has to be with an outlet that people trust, that they don't think it's a soft interview, that they don't think it's going to be easy, or that you've, you know, kind of prearranged some cozy chat, and it has to be with a woman. So if you're going to change the way that people see you, it's up to you to do so, and we'll give you a platform to take that opportunity and make the best or worst of it.
So an opportunity to change the narrative. Were they given a veto on the final edit?
No.
No. Okay.
Never.
Okay. I'm just going to play a piece from the movie as opposed to the real interview. And this is you talking to Prince Andrew about how he's perceived by the world outside. And this is in front of his daughter. So can I say that, that this was quite ballsy of you?
You can.
Yeah.
You know how people see you, don't you?
Why don't you spell it out?
Randy, Andy, Air Miles, Andy. This is sex and girls and planes and private islands and money. And with respect, the public see these stories and they think, yep, I can believe that. This isn't bad for your brand. This is your brand.
Right. So after you saying that to him, he, in a perverse way, he laughed. You got his trust. He agreed to do it. And as you said, it was on the Thursday, went out on Saturday, and we'll get to the interview itself. We just have to take a quick commercial break, if you don't mind, Sam. It's just a minute and a half, and we'll talk to you more after that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're speaking to Sam McAllister, who was a producer on Newsnight back in 2019, and she was responsible for setting up the interview between Emily Maitlis and Prince Andrew. The Thursday, it was the interview was recorded in the palace. Whereabouts in the palace?
The South Drawing Room, if that means anything to you, but a very own ornate room, bigger than most London flats.
How many people were in the room?
Well, there were quite a few Newsnight people, but we kept it to a skeleton crew and then a couple of palace people. So probably about 10 people in the room, I would say.
OK. You had heard him sort of answer the questions in that meeting on the Monday or Tuesday. And now you thought, as often happens, and I know from this business, often happens, they do, researchers, producers do a briefing call with somebody. They say he's going, you know, they've said this, you won't believe what he said. And then when it comes to the actual thing, they say none of the things that they said in the briefing call. So you were surprised to hear him say a lot of the things he had said in the briefing call.
No, absolutely. I mean, we met him face to face on the Monday. Yes. I was lucky enough I had Emily, or Gillian Anderson, as the case may be, with me. So she had witnessed the things that he said, but we never thought he would say them on camera. You know, the seriousness of the nature of the allegations against him, which, of course, he still denies, the importance of this issue to the countless victims of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, a massive responsibility. And you assumed he would just kind of, you know, come on camera and relentlessly apologise. But in the event, he said many of the things that he said to us on the Monday. And that was the shocking element for me, that he said those on camera to the UK and indeed to the world.
Now, people may not remember the details of the interview, but when questioned about his relationship, his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein, they talked about the fact that Jeffrey had been accused, he'd done some time in prison, he was out, and that he went over to New York to end the relationship, but stayed in Jeffrey's house for 3 or 4 days afterwards, had dinner with them and all those sort of things. It just all fell apart from him, but yet he didn't feel it was that way.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because in a sense, I had that a lot with people that I represented in you know, the criminal law, that they sometimes focus on the wrong things. And of course, as an ordinary member of the public, with someone facing allegations of this level of seriousness, what you're looking for is a simple explanation, an apology for the friendship, and an explanation of the terrible allegations against you, for better or worse. But he became very interested in the minutiae, the details. So saying, for example, it was a convenient place to stay. So discordant for the average person, but seemed sensible to him, I suspect. So the space between his life and our lives, I think, was really, you know, exposed in that interview and in his answers.
Exposed, and turns out to be ginormous, as you would expect. Because in talking about Jeffrey Epstein being in one of the royal residence, Emily suggested it was a party. He said, no, it wasn't a party. It was a straightforward shooting weekend. Of course, everybody knows what a straightforward shooting weekend is. And he was then confronted by Emily with the accusations from Virginia Roberts, also known as Dufresne, and that he had met her, bought a drink for her, danced with her, had sex with her. And he responded. I'm just going to play something from the original interview, Sam, just to bring people into the room. So you're there watching this, and it's silence. It's an uneasy silence, isn't it, in those rooms?
It really is.
Yeah. So Emily puts those accusations to him.
I have no recollection of ever meeting this lady. None whatsoever.
You don't remember meeting her?
No.
She says she met you in 2001. She dined with you. She danced with you. You bought her drinks. You were in Tramp nightclub in London. And she went on to have sex with you in a house in Belgravia belonging to Ghislaine Maxwell.
Didn't happen. There are a number of things that are wrong with that story. One of which is that I don't know where the bar is in Tramps. I don't drink. I don't think I've ever bought a drink in Tramps whenever I was there.
So you're 15 feet behind him.
Yes.
And you can, all you can do is hear him. You can't see the expression on his face. I watched it again after watching the movie, and I can see him going red at various times, which suggests to me that he may be lying. I don't know. But how were you feeling there when that's happening?
It's really quite an extraordinary moment, because obviously the seriousness of these allegations,
yes,
you know, absolutely horrific things. And we owe such a duty of care to, you know, Virginia Roberts and her courageous, you know, kind of like battle to be vindicated in this situation. And to be clear, he still strenuously denies these allegations. But to sit there and listen to the way he replied to that, it's such a misunderstanding, you know, whether or not he drank or whether or not he bought a drink, really irrelevant. Obviously, the thing is whether or not he sexually assaulted this young woman. And it was just, you know, a very hard interview to sit in, given the seriousness of, you know, the implications for her in comparison to some of the glibness of the answers.
She was 17 at the time, she claims. And as you say, he disputes that. How many hours preparation did you and the team and Emily put into that interview?
So basically, they were on a timer, right? So how it works is an interview's producer, you're kind of like a surrogate. You kind of give birth to the baby of the interview and then you pass it to someone else, right? Yeah. So Esme Wren, who, fantastic, unflappable, solid editor played by Rom Lagara in our movie, they basically had, you know, theoretically 70 hours, but factually probably about, you know, 40 hours to prep that from scratch, the most important interview in terms for the victims of Epstein and Maxwell, the alleged victim of Prince Andrew himself, for the nation and for the world, an immense pressure, and what extraordinary feat of journalism that Esme and Emily pulled off in terms of that preparation, helped by other members of the Newsnight team.
I saw a quote from you in one of your interviews that you said, people remember interviews, not movies.
They remember interviews, not films.
Yes.
And so in Newsnight, we often had beautiful films.
Oh, I see. Directed. Reports.
Yes, reports. Yes. We call them films at Newsnight. Yes.
No, I thought you were talking about... Yeah, okay, right. Sorry. That is pretentious.
That's the translation.
Yeah. And there's a moment in the movie where Amanda Thirsk, who's the chief advisor to Prince Andrew, interrupts the interview. And I looked at the real interview, and there does seem to be an edit there because Emily starts afresh again. Did that actually happen?
I remember there was an interruption, but I can't remember the exact veracity. But obviously, a number of sources who I can't reveal were spoken to, as well as my good self, to make sure I was telling the truth, of course, but also to add layers to, you know, what happened in the palace, because I wasn't there the whole time, you know. So that may well have come from someone else.
So talk to me a little bit about this hubris, this lack of connection to the real world. Now, like, is that enough of an excuse, or is Andrew, like, he comes across as a sort of a gormless idiot at times, Sam?
Well, look, I don't think it's an excuse, and I wouldn't call him a gormless idiot, because I'm far too nice to say that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the truth is, Ray, that there is a real disconnect, you know, in that rite of passage, that birth, that you're born, you spend 59 years at that stage being told that you're amazing, you don't have to pay a bill, you don't have to worry about getting a job. You know, there's a real kind of, like, comfort that you've been told how incredible you are. And understandably, 59 years in, you probably believe it. So he is, in a sense, a situation made by the circumstance of his birth. And I call it royal delusion, misunderstanding about his capacity. But lots of people have it too, in milder form. CEOs, now and again presenters, you know, people running big companies, you know, people in the kind of, like, powerful position. His is a very extreme example with huge consequences.
And obviously the people around him are pulled in because he was ill-advised to do the interview in the first place.
Well, I don't know whether he chose to do it himself. We'll never know for certain. He struck me as a man who made his own decisions.
He went to his mum, though.
Well, he said he was going to his mum, but I definitely wasn't in the room. So I'll never know for sure, because I wasn't there.
Okay. Finally, just say that, which was very clever, and no surprise now that you lecture in negotiations, that in that meeting that you said to them, well, you can tell your story, but if you don't, people will what? You gave them the sort of it was like, by not doing it, you're making a statement. What was that statement?
Yeah, I basically said, you know, that if you don't tell people, like, what the narrative is, then they're going to draw their own conclusions. And I just feel that in the modern climate, sending out 5 lines on a piece of paper saying that we didn't do these extremely serious allegations is just not going to cut it. And we expect people to, you know, stand up, figuratively or literally, and give an account for themselves. And it could have gone differently. The questions were fair. It was the answers that were the problem, and his account was fatal.
Sam McAllister, author of Scoop, executive producer of the movie Scoop, which is on Netflix now. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks, Sam. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Cormac is on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3:00. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.